Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today's episode is with a true icon in the space of health and health optimization. And I'm not going to tell you who it is yet. You probably already know anyway, because you read the title. But just for those who didn't read the title, I'm going to let you be surprised. In the meantime, I want to thank you for being here. As always, I'd love to invite you to sign up for my newsletter at natnidham.com on my website. And also, if you get value from this episode, please make sure to share it with your friends, your networks, and anybody else you think would get value from it. And if you could take a minute and leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, I would be super grateful. And so would the rest of the team. Now, let's thank our sponsors and talk a little bit about the episode. Now, we all know that what I'm doing right now, staring at screens all day long, eating foods that we know are not the best for us, on occasion, and sometimes more often than on occasion, being deprived of natural sunlight because we're staring at those screens, and dealing with chronic stress, all of these are ultimately the enemies of longevity, but they're also an increasing part of modern life. And while the enemies are on the rise, we are not helpless against them. That's the good news. And you know me, I've tried a lot of things once, but it's the things that I keep doing and plan to do long term, the things that are simple, powerful, and that really work, that I really bring to you guys. And every day, there's one simple thing that I do, which I believe helps me to fight a whole bunch of those enemies of longevity. And that is that I take MitoPure by Timeline Nutrition. Now, here's why. Longevity takes energy. Specifically, it takes cellular energy. And we know that cellular energy comes from your mitochondria. And these energy factories take in all the nutrients that we take in, the carbs, the fats, and the proteins, and churn out that life force that keeps you going strong today and ultimately for life. And recent research has shown that when your mitochondria are strong, not only are they generating energy, but they're also acting to protect your DNA. Now, Timeline Nutrition has cracked the code when it comes to optimizing mitochondria. And as a science-first company, they are founded and led by doctors and scientists, and they've been supported by 15 years of research, 11 clinical studies, and 56 patents. Now, and that is for Timeline's MitoPure, which is among the most deeply studied healthy aging compounds. It's the first and only nutrient clinically shown to support mitochondrial health by triggering mitophagy, which is the body's natural process of mitochondrial rejuvenation. So basically, it's going to make sure that those mitochondria are running like well-oiled machines, making sure you're ready to fight the enemies of longevity today and every day. Now, to get yours, you're going to want to go to timelinenutrition.com/shop/nutrition and make sure to use code NAT10 to get 10% off your order. All right, let's talk about the episode. If you, like me, and I know you are interested in separating fact from fiction in the world of diet and exercise, then this is the episode you want to listen to. In today's conversation with none other than JJ Virgin about her career journey and the lessons she's learned in the health and fitness industry, we discuss the flaws of traditional fitness advice, the importance of personal experience in coaching, and the misconceptions of weight loss and exercise. We also explore the role of genetics in history and fitness, the influence of media, misleading headlines, the challenges of vegan and vegetarian diets. Really, we talk about all the extremes, and this conversation really emphasizes the importance of eating protein first, building resilience, finding balance in health and wellness, all those amazing things. But let me just tell you that her perspective is phenomenal. We dive into the importance of protein and resistance training, limitations of certain types of exercise. And basically, we talk about improving gut health, like all of the different elements in making that happen. And she talks about so many, we get into so many of the nitty gritty of really being your healthiest and bestest. So I think you're going to love the conversation. She's such a fantastic guest. I mean, talk about a pro, right? And she's truly like one of my heroes. She's one of the first people in this space that I followed. So to learn more about JJ Virgin, if in case you don't already know, you can go to her website, which is jjvirgin.com, where she's got incredible resources. And you can also follow her on Instagram at jj.virgin. Okay. One more sponsor to thank. Look, I think we're all familiar with the concept of cellular health, supporting those tiny building blocks that make up our tissues and organs and house the most fundamental elements of life, like our DNA mitochondria. But nobody really talks about cell membrane health, or not enough people do. It's that flexible barrier that keeps all of those tiny organelles inside the cell, keeps the toxins out, and makes sure that the nutrients get in. So this is a concept that my friends at Body Bio have been sharing for decades, teaching the importance of cell membrane medicine. And it is that membrane is made primarily of healthy fats called phospholipids, like phosphatidylcholine. We can get these fats from our diet, but the problem is that with modern food production and suboptimal diets, we're not getting nearly as much as we used to. And the body depletes phospholipids faster than ever, thanks to toxin damage and free radicals. So the solution to the problem, never present a problem without a solution, is to supplement with Body Bio PC, a full spectrum phospholipid complex. We can repair and replenish the phospholipids in our cell membranes, setting the stage for healthy cells and optimal aging. PC has become another one of those non-negotiables in my book for healthy aging, cellular health, and cognitive function. You can visit bodybio.com today and get 15% off your first order with code Natalie, N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E. And now let's dive into the episode.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.
A huge welcome to the show. JJ, it's such a pleasure to have you here today.
Well, I mean, behind the scenes, we had to finally just stop talking and turn the recorder on because we're like, oh, so I feel like I've met a new bestie. I'm so excited.
Yeah, no, me too. It's always when, well, I mean, we've kind of met casually in the past, but it was in very much in passing. And, you know, leading up to this podcast, I'm like, okay, this is so cool because everything I've heard you talk about, I was just telling you, I was listening to another podcast you were being interviewed on, and I spent half the podcast going, yes, yes, oh my God, yes. So, anybody sitting outside is wondering, what is she doing? I'm like, never mind. I'm just hanging out here. So JJ, you know, your career is, it's your whole career, right? Which is what's amazing. I think it's one of the things that brings such incredible depth and perspective to your point of view and your knowledge base is, as you said to me when we started, like I had a whole other career. I mean, I started in this space. I started in the health space. I shifted over to a different space, then came back to it. You've been at this since the age when I started, which was when I became a fitness instructor when I was 18 or 19 years old or something. And you just stayed in it, right? Which I just think gives you this unique perspective over time because you've ridden so many of these crazy waves.
And I've done so many of the crazy things.
I know. So I was going to ask you, and I mean, you know, just saying that, tell us a little bit about some of the craziest things you think have come and gone over this whole time, which you don't have to talk about all of them because we'll be here till tomorrow.
I know. Well, maybe someone listening will go, wait a minute, I'm doing that now.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll save you. So, okay. And one of the things really, Natalie, that I've always stuck by is I'm not willing to coach someone on something that I haven't done myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's super important. Although early on when I was a personal trainer in my 20s, I did have clients going through, you know, going through menopause, and I'm like, oh, so, and hint, hint, if you're going through menopause and you're working with a nutritionist or a trainer, way better if they've actually done this themselves, because they'll get you at a whole different level. Mm-hmm. Wow. So I would say, you know, I started this in high school, actually, because I was teaching dance class in high school, and my dance teacher was like, the only way you're going to learn how to become a better dancer is to teach the classes. Really, she just wanted to go on vacation and she needed a teacher for cheap.
Whatever, but she's actually right.
She was right. It was great. So I ended up teaching a tap dance, which is my thing. And then also teaching calisthenics, because back then when I was in high school, we had calisthenics, we had jazzercise, right?
Yeah. You remember it. We had Jane Fonda.
Yes. Oh, I remember the anatomy asylum. I worked for Richard Simmons.
Oh my God.
And had to teach in a toga. I mean, I literally, like, if I go through the crazy things, and I forgot about that one. I worked in Japan. I helped bring aerobics to Japan. I taught tap dancing in Japan.
Wow.
But the wildest things, I remember early on when I was in graduate school, very specifically, like all the research that was being done in graduate school was on cardiovascular, mainly for a couple different reasons. Number one, we got funding from Precor.
That's a good one. Funding helps. Yes.
So we had all of these cardiovascular machines. Number two, way easier to do research on cardio because you had us in a semester and you had students who could come in and they could do a very clear 30-minute block three times a week. But also there was this predominant thought in the department, and this is where I got in trouble and I might have gone rogue. And I'll explain why. And I think this is what's so important. And it's the difference between like research and evidence. So here I'm in the department and I am now personal training my way through graduate school. And because I was teaching, I was actually running an aerobic studio in Westwood, California when I was at UCLA, and someone called up and said, "Hey, will you come to my house?" So I became a personal trainer. The answer always is yes. Mm-hmm. So, and as far as I can tell, and I was just talking to Mark Sisson about it, he's my oldest friend in fitness. We've known each other 35 years. I was at dinner with him and Shalene Johnson. We're like, I think you guys were the oldest personal trainers. And it was you and Tony Horton, embodied by Jake. You know, there we were in LA doing this. And so anyway, back at over at grad school, the big theory was that you do not start to lift weights until you've lost the weight. And that if you want to lose weight, you must do long, slow distance cardio. And I remember even back then, they're like, if you can't do at least 30 minutes to get into your fat burning zone, don't bother.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, how much damage did we do with that? Mm-hmm. So I was working as a trainer. Now, if you make people hungrier, lose muscle, and get fatter, you're really not going to probably get paid.
No.
You're not going to last long in the world. Like, they're paying for results, right?
Yeah.
And what I quickly learned is that what I was learning in graduate school wasn't working. It didn't work.
Which is awesome.
It was like, okay, I can have them walk, you know, and they'll eat less and walk. The problem is if they're doing a lot of cardio, they're probably a little hungrier and it's not offsetting it. We're not changing their bank account by adding in muscle. And I just kept looking at this going, this makes no sense to me. Because, and I didn't, back then, I remember I bought the first textbooks in exercise endocrinology. There was no mention back then about insulin or cortisol or any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, okay, we know muscle weighs more than fat. We know muscle's more metabolically active. It costs more than fat to keep on your body. So wouldn't we want to have more muscle? Like, it just was like, duh. And so I kind of went rogue. I did my graduate research project on lifting biomechanics. And part of it was how quickly could I develop strength in people. And then I did with all my clients, I had them doing resistance training and high intensity interval training. Wow. And I would take them down to Gold's Gym in Venice and take them on field trips. Because we were working out at their homes, right? But I'm like, okay, we're going to go on a field trip so you can see what's possible, right? Because there were women at Gold's Gym in Venice that in their 70s, who I remember in my 20s, I was like, I will kill to look like that. Like women that you would look at and go, now we know it's totally possible that you can be in your best shape in your 50s, 60s, 70s. Don't let anyone tell you can't. But back then, you know, and still the prevailing thought is, oh, you're over the hill. You know,
and you lose muscle as you age. Yes.
And you lose muscle as you age. If you sit on your butt You lose muscles, you age. I did a DEXA at 39, then I did a DEXA scan at 59 because I was on a mission now. I was going to get in the best shape of my life at 60 and prove that this is a ridiculous, all the stuff's ridiculous. My DEXA at 39, my DEXA at 59, because you know, if you're not monitoring your body composition as you go through, people tell me all the time, I weigh the same. I'm like, yeah, but it's not the same weight.
And how do you look?
You know, it's not the same weight. It's what your weight's made up of. Well, my DEXA at 39 and 59 was exactly the same. Same Amazing. Weight, same body composition. And so I was like, you know, that is amazing that you to maintain that. And that just proves the point that you do not have to lose muscle if you are actively doing what you need to do. But I contend we really need to be laying down as much as possible. So then I went, all right, I'm going to put on more, which I did manage to do, and drop more fat. Like, I'm leaner now. I'm as lean as I've ever been in my life. I actually got a little leaner at 60 than I've ever been. So, and my husband, when we did his DEXA, we got a little surprise. I kind of had an idea he was a little like had higher. I knew he had higher body fat than me, but I wasn't going to be the one to say anything. That would not be the, would not support our relationship. No. It's great that the DEXA told him, however, and the DEXA told him he was 25% body fat. He didn't really have much in the visceral adipose tissue, which was great. But, you know, he's always been athletic and always eaten well. He wasn't following what I would have prescribed that he do. And then when he got the 25% body fat for a DEXA, which men have 3-5% essential fat. So a man, you know, an athletic male, you expect.
That's a bit high for a guy.
Yeah, it's high. So all of a sudden he went into overdrive because at first I'm looking at him like, could the machine be wrong? No, DEXAs aren't wrong. Anyway, he dropped from 25% to 10% in about 8 to 10 months, 27 pounds of fat off, 23 pounds of muscle on. And literally, he's now 59, approaching 60 this year. And he's never looked like this, never in his life, not in high school, not in college. This is the best he's ever looked. And I just say all this because all this prevailing thought of like, you know, this is the best, you're going to be declining all the time, and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, well, you know, perception creates reality, right? And if you flip that switch and go, what if the only limitations were the limitations in your mind? And actually now with all the research we have, with the, you know, supplements we have, with the more time and money you have as you age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can be totally different.
Well, and the knowledge, right? I think that a big piece of it is, well, and here's the tough one, knowing who to listen to.
Oh my goodness, and is that a hard one?
That's a tough one. That's a really tough one, right? And understanding that no matter how many shortcuts, and there are shortcuts, like there's some great tools that, like, I'm a huge fan of Katsu bands, for example, the variable resistant training.
Yes, yes.
Like there's some amazing tools, or the Carol bike, but they're not going to replace actually doing the work. Like, I have to get myself to a gym with a trainer and push really heavy stuff twice a week because there's not much that's going to do. I don't think there's anything really that's going to actually replace putting in the time.
I'm so glad you said that because I know there's still this idea that you can somehow get in the best shape of your life in 5 minutes a week.
Yeah. No.
Flat out no. And what we were talking about before is, yes, hey, those shortcuts are great when you've done the work. So if you first, you've got to major in the majors before you start to major in the minors. And I find so much we get all bogged down in the minor details when if we would focus on the majors first, what to eat, when to eat, you know, how to exercise. And, you know, exercise is a blanket term for a lot of different things, just like diet is. And with both of these things, just like recovery is with sleep and sauna and all these things, these are all tools. So what is the foundational one that's going to work best for you? And hint, hint, with diet and exercise, there are many different ways to do this. And anyone who tells you there's only one way to do this, and this is the way, this is not religion.
Yeah.
It's science. And then you have to take the science, put it with the evidence, and put it with you. And these are all tools. So it's going to depend on what are your goals? What is your lifestyle? What is your genetics? Although I'd argue that's not nearly as important as people think it is. you know, and what's your history? Like, what's your health history? What issues do you have? I blew out my knee when at 17, I wanted to be a point ballerina.
Oh yeah.
Now that I am 6 feet tall. You'll see when you meet me. So my sports I loved in college, in high school, they kept trying to get me on the basketball team and trying to get me on the volleyball team. But no, I wanted to do gymnastics and point ballet.
JJ, the physics are not in your favor here.
I know. I was like, it's so funny because one of my sons who's 6'2" is like a tricker. He does tricking. So he does, it's gymnastics and martial arts put together. And he has like blown out his knee. I mean, I'm like, honey, we're tall humans.
Yeah.
This is not what we're supposed to be spending our time doing. But I blew out my knee when I was 17 and I managed to, I had a bunch of ACL repairs. So, you know, I have a weird knee and a weird hip because of that, but you work around them. Mm-hmm. So what do you need to do? You're going to bring your history book of musculoskeletal issues, which I would argue if you have those, it's even more important for you to do things.
It's triple more important because you'll end up tripled. Yeah.
This is not when you back off. This is when you lean in and, you know, you're going to have whatever health stuff you have going on. Then you have your schedule, your lifestyle, all that stuff factors in to create the perfect thing for the N of one. You know, based on research, and I don't know about you. I mean, I was in graduate school and doctoral school, and the biggest thing I learned from school is how you can lie with statistics. I had to take 5 statistics courses. I was like, this is ridiculous. And you know, how to read a study. And then you look at it and go, these studies, this like, and the problem is the study might have all of the right information, but then you have the media. And if we have not learned anything over the last 4 years, I hope we have learned that the media is insane. Mm-hmm. And they'll pull out headlines like we were just talking about with the latest headline of like intermittent fasting is going to kill you. It's going to increase your cardiovascular risk. I go, it couldn't possibly be the ultra processed foods and all the toxins and the plastics they're finding in the arterial plaque and all the stress. No, it's not that. And how sedentary we are and the fact that 80% of us are overweight or obese. No, it must be the intermittent fasting. I'm like, Whoa.
I mean, we both agree, but like neither of us has read the study yet. So, you know,
We are going to look at that. And here's the thing, like, we've got to look at all these things. And this is the most challenging thing because we all have our biases. And to say you're not biased is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Of course we are. We can't not be, but you also need to be critically open-minded. And I mean, I've changed my mind on loads of things like, you know, but it's generally because I'll learn something and like we learned something in school. I went, well, that's not working. Let's dig in and see what's working. I mean, literally, I was in LA in the 80s. What was going on? Fat was the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Everyone was going vegan or vegetarian. Everyone was trying to eat as low fat as possible. I was actually training people out of the Pritikin Center. The goal there was to eat 10% of your calories from fat. Mm-hmm. They only let you have fish 2 days a week. The rest of it was all vegetarian.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything was about doing as much endurance training as you possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And you end up with bags of bones. But, but you know, what do you say? I mean, it is interesting, though, that you – and I'm curious about your point of view on this because I hear you on protein and eating protein first. And I do want to talk about that with you. But what do you say that you get these – and I don't know if – it's hard for me to understand if they're outliers or if they've just found – a trick, but you do end up with some of these people who are vegan or vegetarians who have really good lean muscle mass. Like they have, they show, and I mean, my perspective is maybe they're outliers. They've put in the work to do it properly so that they've found a way to get the leucine in. They found the way to, you know, to give their bodies what they need. There could be a little piece of genetics in there, like, but what's your perspective on those guys? I mean, I'm no fan. I'm not a fan of vegan and vegetarian, to be clear.
Well, I think we have to differentiate between vegan and vegetarian because it's night and day. So, I mean, you could easily do this as a vegetarian, getting in dairy and eggs. The challenge I always see with that is when I was doing all the food sensitivity testing that led me to write the Virgin Diet.
Yeah.
What I saw was people who focus predominantly, like a vegetarian is going to focus predominantly on dairy, eggs, and soy. And what I saw is they became intolerant to that.
Yeah.
Because one of the key things in a diet, when you look at it, is it should be eat local, eat seasonal, eat organic. Mm-hmm. Vary your diet, right? Mm-hmm. And so now you've got foods that for some reason, and I don't know why it is with dairy and eggs and soy, but I mean, soy, I really worry about all the GMO stuff. But yeah, when I looked at food sensitivity testing, it was always dairy and eggs.
Yeah.
Dairy and eggs. Probably because it's just so ubiquitous. Probably also because you are what you eat, ate, and what they're doing to those chickens is just not nice. It's not nice.
No, it's bad. Yes.
And ditto the factory cow. So you've got all of that issue going on. Vegan is such a challenge because I don't know. First of all, I see a lot of ultra processed vegans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so I just want to distinguish. You know, are you a whole foods vegan or are you an ultra processed vegan? Because I know a lot of vegans who are literally like, I go to their house and look in their fridge. I'm like, this is just like junk food hell in here of all this garbage. So that's the first thing. But if you are eating a whole foods plant-based diet, I don't know how you'd possibly get in what you need from, you know, protein wise. There's no way to do it. You can't get it in. Like you can't get it in without going so overboard on carbs or fat. And I think that protein leverage hypothesis that I think now needs to be renamed because it's clearly not a hypothesis anymore that shows that we will continue to eat carbs and fat in order to get up to enough protein, enough essential amino acids because our body needs them.
Interesting.
You know, I haven't seen a vegan who's over the age of 40 who's got the muscle mass you're talking about.
Interesting.
In your teens and 20s, totally different story because it's hormonally driven.
Mm-hmm.
And so like you can do these things in your teens and 20s and be fine. And you can probably hold on to a lot of it in your 30s. But I know that one of the reasons I'm writing the book that I'm writing is my writer on this book who does all this with me. She's absolutely amazing. She helps me write my books, produce my events, do my PBS shows. And I'm basically kind of writing the book for her. And first thing I made her do was go get a DEXA scan. And I'm like, because she's been, you know, a vegetarian, but very much like on the, you know, we'll do a little dairy, eggs, and a little bit of soy. But, you know, she's pretty close to vegan, vegetarian. And she's osteoporotic. She's sarcopenic. She's skinny fat. She's everything. And I'm like, okay, what's wild is she's writing this book. I'm giving her all the research to show how frightening this is for her as she ages, what's in store for her with sarcopenia. Like, you know, citing the statistics of sarcopenia at 50 plus and breaking your hip at 60 plus and all this stuff, because it's, she's the poster child of it. Yet she's still holding on to this diet.
Well, she's not a, you know what it is? I think part of it is you know what? It's a little bit like when my son was born, he was born 3 months early. He was a full on preemie. And while he was in the NICU, I kept hearing about these preemies and all these terrible things and this and that. And I'm like, oh yeah, I never actually referred it back to him. I don't ask me why. They were like, oh, you're not going to be able to, those preemies, they can't do this, that, or the other thing. I mean, in some ways it saved me, but interestingly enough, I think sometimes, like for your writer, she's getting all this information and she's somehow, it's not, it's like it doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier to her internal self.
It's wild. So here's what you can do though. You know, that's why when I look at all this, I like to say eat protein first, because I've now been with enough people who will sit down and they go, I get too full to eat protein. I'm like, stop eating the other stuff before the protein. I did a lecture for a group in New Orleans, and then a couple of us went out to dinner, and I watched one woman dinner who's another poster child for, okay, you need to do this. And I'm just curious. I'm going to watch. I'm not being judgmental.
No.
I'm being curious.
Mm-hmm.
I watch her eat the appetizer. I watch her have some bread. I watch her have a salad that she turned into a sundae because it's got dried fruit and glazed nuts. It's got raspberry vinaigrette. She's got 5 calories of arugula. She's got hundreds of calories of fat and sugar. Mm-hmm. So now she's had all of that and a glass of wine, and her dinner comes and it is eggplant. Now, eggplant's just an olive oil sponge. Let's be real. Like, mm-hmm. you know, eggplant on its own is the possibly one of the most vile foods ever. Like, it's just a gross thing. Unless you sponge it up with a lot of crap in it, it's just nasty. It's nasty, right? I mean, who would sit down and eat a piece of eggplant?
And the nightshade to boot. So
yeah. So I mean, it's like, yuck. So anyway, this is now what she's going to have. I'm looking at her. Now, I have ordered a massive steak because I'm going to take some home and have it for breakfast back to the hotel. And I'm like looking at her. I'm like, hey, like, I'm going to share some of my steak with you. She goes, I'm too full. I'm like, and I go, oh, I bet you could just skip the eggplant and we could just have this. Same amount of calories, FYI. Don't think, you think you're having this eggplant and you've got a little health halo around your head, but that thing's loaded with fat. So she's like, you're protein shaming me. I go, yes, yes, I am. I'm protein shaming you and we are going to eat this together. So she did.
Oh, you're kidding.
And then I sent her some essential amino acids because I went, you know, this is your insurance policy. Mm-hmm. I know that if you sit down at your meal and you eat your protein first, then we aren't going to be too full because we ate all that other stuff. Then you eat the other stuff. Eat your protein first, then have your non-starchy vegetables. If you're so concerned about your blood sugar, have a little apple cider vinegar or some berberine a little bit before your meal. And guess what? You'll be fine eating protein. It's not going to jack your blood sugar. And then eat your vegetables next. Mm-hmm. And you can have really balanced blood sugar, overeat too much healthy foods, unhealthy, and store fat. So don't think that balancing your blood sugar so that you have your apple cider vinegar, your vegetables, and then you eat your cake so it's not raising your blood sugar is going to somehow magically mean it doesn't end up on your butt, because it will.
Yep.
Okay.
100%. Thank you for saying that. Yes.
That just drives me nuts. I watch these things and I go, so you're showing hacks to be able to eat cake or cookies or things.
Yeah. So your blood sugar doesn't go up, then this magically is going to save you.
And, you know, it's like, hey, here's the thing. I've relaxed a lot about all of these things. You know, eat your protein first, eat some non-starchy vegetables, a little bit of fruit. Likely you will be too full to go off and have that. But if you want to have a little bit of it, have a little bit of it. Don't beat yourself up. It's fine. Just track it all in your like tracking app to see where things are.
Yeah.
So don't beat yourself up. You know, life is going to involve cake here and there. Mm-hmm.
Plus, if you're moving and you're exercising, you can, the way I refer to it to people is you're building resilience into your system. You're building a buffer zone, right? And all those good practices give you the wiggle room. But if you're eating and sitting on the couch and eating and sitting on the couch and eating and sitting on the couch or sitting in your office chair, whatever place you're sitting, you have no wiggle room.
Right. No margin for error.
There's no margin. And even then you're kind of up a creek. So great. So eating protein first, eat protein like it's your job is another line that I like to use sometimes.
And that's because
I talk to a lot of people who are using the weight loss peptides. And one of the things, and I think you agree with me.
I'm a big fan of the weight loss peptides.
I'm a huge fan of the weight loss peptides.
I know. And some RD wanted to pinged me on social media and told me I was disgusting, which I thanked her very much for her honest opinion and gave her a little heart.
Good for you.
I put my son on it after hearing Dr. Bill Seeds talk about it, Dr. William Seeds. I was so fortunate to sit in a lecture of his and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I started to really unpack these peptides. They are so much more than weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. I think that's what people don't understand. And I'll give you a couple ways you can do it if you can't get a hold of the peptides, because I think these are one of the most amazing longevity things on the planet. And the big argument that they make you lose muscle mass, let's just refute this stupidity.
Yep.
Number one, every diet, what poorly designed diet without resistance training will make you lose muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
25 to 40%. It has been shown over and over and over again. So if you have a diet that reduces your appetite and you do not have a well-designed plan with protein and resistance training, yes, you'll lose muscle mass. It's not the drug. It's the program. It's not the drug.
Yeah.
The drug can help you. In fact, have you been looking at any of Dr. Tina Moore's stuff?
No, I don't know.
Gosh. Check her out. T-Y-N-A Moore. She has really deep dive.
Oh, Dr. Tina.
Yeah, Dr. Instagram? Tina.
Yeah,
She has got some great research on these GLP-1 and GIP antagonists and what they can do. And it's amazing. And here's the thing. I mean, the U.S., 80% overweight or obese?
Mm-hmm.
Less than 7% metabolically healthy. We have something that could help.
Yeah.
And once you get to a point, you know, you don't lose weight to get healthy. You have to get healthy so that your body can burn off fat and hold on to or build muscle. Mm-hmm. And so you have to restore insulin sensitivity as quickly as possible. I'm working with someone right now who's 300 and now we started 2 weeks, 10 days ago, maybe he was 384. Now he's 375.
Okay.
But his insulin was 35 and his vitamin D was 16. And by the way, he'd had labs done. No one did anything about it. I was like, what were we going to do with this number? Like, and surprisingly, everything else besides low testosterone, which he was taking 2,500 steps a day. And the research is pretty clear that if you're under 4,000 steps a day, you'll have hypogonadism. So I was like, okay, like he actually looks pretty good besides those things. But the key thing I wanted to do with him is start to restore insulin sensitivity and give him a fighting chance.
Yeah.
So you look at this, although he's not on these drugs at this point, but you look at this and go, we need to restore insulin sensitivity so someone can start to burn off fat, so someone can build muscle, so they can have a fighting chance. This helps do that.
Yeah.
100%. And helps turn off some of the noise and also helps with, like, I put my son on it because it helps with, you know, neuroregeneration. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have a son with multiple brain injuries, like amazing what it's done for him.
Yeah.
Supposedly can help with cardiovascular, helps with osteoarthritis, helps. So, I mean, like we have to really, I don't know why there's so much anger, hostility, and negativity about this stuff out there. It's bizarre.
Well, and it's like every, you know, it's unfortunately, it's become, instead of being a really powerful tool, it's become a hack or a shortcut, right? And this is where the word hack becomes a bad word, because people use it, people want to use it instead of exercise, instead of fixing their diet, instead of doing the work, where actually, to me, these are like the training wheels you would put on a kid's bike, right? And so at the beginning, we have the training wheels right down on the ground so the kid doesn't fall over and get traumatized in the whole nine yards. And over time, we start to lift the training wheels so that now our kid no longer relies on the training wheels. And how we lift the training wheels is we get in the gym, we eat our protein like it's our job, we do all the things. We learn to recalibrate our taste buds because your food reward center is also being positively affected. So you're not as driven by cravings and your addictions.
Don't you think, like I look at this and I always go, okay, if this is working so well, why is it and what's going on? Have we done something over the last 20 to 30 years? Because when you really look at this, like this all started to go sideways in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, when we went fat free and all that garbage, and it's been accelerating.
Yeah.
And so now it's been 40 years from that. It's accelerating. And all, I mean, it was the 80s when things like those Snackwells cookies.
Yeah.
I know. We all like those Snackwells cookies where you would get the Snackwells cookies and they were fat free. So you thought you could just like, right?
Chow down, baby.
But you wonder how much all of that ultra processed food has really just trashed our gut microbiome and made it so our GLP-1 actually doesn't work the way it's supposed to work, which it should be. It should rise when you eat. Now we know protein, fat, fiber, that trifecta really works well. It should rise with exercise. But you wonder how much have we just totally trashed our gut microbiome. It doesn't work anymore. And when I look at this, I go, well, isn't that really interesting? And shouldn't we be looking at how do we restore our gut? So how do we go back and go, okay, now we're insulin resistant with trash gut microbiomes.
Yeah.
And so could we go back and start resistance training to improve insulin sensitivity, get good sleep to improve insulin sensitivity, start to rehab our gut microbiome, use these medications, or there's two supplements that actually do this and do it really well. Now, you know, a GLP-1 is going to last longer. It's going to be hovering around versus when you look at when you eat, it comes up, it comes down, very transient.
Yeah.
But RX Sugar, Allulose, and RX Sugar, the brand, has been doing just a load of research. They have an amazing advisory board. Rick Johnson, who wrote Nature Wants Us to Be Fat, Dr. Ben Bickman, Dom D'Agostino. I mean, just a killer advisory board of brainiacs. And he's done so much research, this founder. He's crazy over RX Sugar. But what he shows is that somewhere between 0.1 to 0.4 grams per kilogram of body weight can actually cause that same GLP-1 rise that you need. So that's one. And in fact, what I started to do was use that. The challenge I have is I don't really like sweet, but the way they put the products together, I can kind of sneak it in.
Yeah.
So I've been putting in 10 grams of allulose. I try to do it before each meal, or I take this other thing called CaloCurb, and this is from New Zealand. This is wild. This is, I met the CEO of this company, and basically New Zealand has been doing research on this, on the things in this product for the last 10 years, spent $30 million. Wow. She licensed this technology and created this product, and they have the research to show GLP-1 increases and hovering around longer and the weight loss that's come from it. So here you can take a pill that is a supplement of natural ingredients, or you can take allulose, which I think is one of the coolest, like it is such an amazing sweetener. And what they showed with the allulose, Dom D'Agostino did this where he ate these little dark chocolate, they're called Swealthy Snacks, that are basically fiber and allulose. Mm-hmm. And he ate one and it would drop his blood sugar. So he could eat that and eat, like you could literally eat that. And someone ate that and ate a candy bar to test, drop their blood sugar.
No kidding.
No kidding. So there's two simple ones. But again, like if I was the benevolent dictator and we had these GLP-1 and GIP drugs, first of all, I think the GLP-1 GIP combo, that is Mounjaro, tirzepatide, et cetera, is the more exciting one.
Yeah, for sure.
I would say you can absolutely use this. You must say that you will go on a body composition machine and be following it that way. You must resistance train at least twice a week, and you must eat this much protein by eating protein first and getting your total in amount each day and enough at each meal. And if you're willing to do that, you get to keep using it. If you're not, you don't have it.
There you go.
That's it.
There
you go. That's it. I mean, of course, that's turning in the world all of a sudden into a scary place because now we're being monitored. However,
it's a better way to be, it's a better reason to monitor than some of the other reasons people are being monitored.
Yes.
but I think that, you know, for me, the question in my mind is why, like you would think that insurance companies would be running to fund this for as many people as humanly possible. And we hear, and I don't want to get into, like, let's not go down that rabbit hole because
I was just going, and now we'll go into the conspiracy theories of the bigger businesses of diabetes.
But you keep people, well, anyway, whatever. And you know what? I'm going to cut that out. We're not going to go that. The CaloCurb's really interesting. They were at A4M, right?
They were at Integrative Healthcare Symposiums where I met her.
Okay. So I think they were also at A4M. I started a conversation, I think, with them. I need to get back to it. Okay. So protein first, we love GLP-1s and GIPs, and I'm with you on the Mounjaro. I just snuck some to my mother, took her off her doctor had her on an old GLP-1 that was basically doing nothing. He's like, oh yeah, your blood sugar's at 125. That's awesome. I'm like,
oh,
no, it's not.
What, liraglutide or what?
Yeah. Trulicity, no. whatever that is. And I'm like, no, it's not. And so finally it took until she couldn't get her hands on it anymore when she said, okay, maybe you could get me some of that other stuff. And we've been watching her blood sugar drop all week on the lowest dose.
Wow. Yeah. And that's the other thing. I heard this from Dr. Tina Moore, and I think that, and this is how I use it with my son as well, is we are microdosing it.
Yes. Less is more.
You don't need very much of this to make a big impact.
For sure. I mean, it depends on the person, but I've seen people keep going higher and higher because they want to lose faster and faster, and they actually hit a wall and the body.
That's the wrong way to do it.
The body slams on the brakes and says, oh no, we're not.
No, you'll get metabolic adaptation from that. Like you can only lose, although Dr. Bill Campbell just did a study and kind of went, oh, this is maybe different in the short term, but really for consistent, steady weight loss, that's going to change your body composition and not throw you into metabolic adaptation where your basal metabolic rate is lower than it should be for your weight. You've got to make sure that you're, again, holding onto or building muscle, preferably building, packing on as much muscle as you can while losing body fat.
Yeah.
That's mission critical. And also, I think that the biggest thing that we are not paying enough attention to is our activity level.
Yeah, 100%. And not just exercise. I think making that distinction, helping people to make that distinction that it's not an either or, that it's a and, right? You need to, I mean, if you're getting your 10,000 steps a day in, That's amazing.
Yes.
But it's not enough. It doesn't.
If you're just doing, because I find people seem to be one or the other. And let's say you are the person who's walking, maybe you do a little Pilates or something. The challenge is as we age, you know, we have fast twitch muscle fibers, slow twitch muscle fibers, and we have the ones that can go either way. Mm-hmm. And they'll shift based on what you're telling your body you need. Your body does this with everything. If you're not eating much protein, your stomach acid goes down.
Yeah.
Right. Your body will shift based on what you're giving it. If you're eating super low carb, you know, you won't need to produce as much insulin. Now all of a sudden you eat carbs and your body's like, what the heck? You know, so your body is smart and it adjusts to what the demands are. Right. And it's not going to do more than it needs to. So when we look at walking, if you were just spending your time walking and doing maybe a little Pilates or something, but nothing that really stresses you, the challenge is you're going to exacerbate that loss of fast twitch fibers. Mm-hmm. So as we age, you hear about this loss of muscle as we age, starting at age 30, which it doesn't have to, as we know. Mm-hmm. But the bigger issue is not actually the muscle that we're losing. It's actually the strength and the power. Mm-hmm. And where we might lose up to 1% of muscle size, it's 2-4% strength, 4-6% power. It's really the power that creates the problem. That's when you're going slow. If you train slow, you go slow.
Yeah.
And that's where you can't, you know, get out of the way of something. You can't catch yourself, and that's where you fall. And so if you are focusing on walking and you're not putting any intensity into that walking, turning that activity into exercise. And I got all this heat on Instagram because I said walking, if you're completely deconditioned, like the person I told you about who I'm working with, who started at 384 pounds, he was getting 2,500 steps in a day. So mm-hmm. we've been working on just getting him up. Right now, he's now 5,000 is his goal, but it's making him sore. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's going to make you sore.
That's
it's
okay.
Just keep moving. Let's get Epsom salts baths and some massage for the win. But you know, once you're in shape, walking is not exercise. It's activity. And activity is 15 to 30% of your metabolism, which in activity, exercise counts too. But we need to count that in. But even if there was a cool study that looked at three groups, a group that did nothing, so nothing changed, of course, the control group, and then a walking 12,000 steps a day, and then a walking 12,000 steps a day, but they were told three times a week to take it up, like take the intensity up on those, on the steps. And the group that took it up actually showed a bigger shift. The group doing 12,000 steps a day, their LDL-C improved, I think. Yeah. Both groups had that improvement, but the group that added the speed saw visceral fat loss and saw some other markers improve as well. So the first thing I always have people do is let's just check your steps. Mm-hmm. Let's get your steps. So you are bare minimum. You will never do less than 8,000 a day. And you watch it throughout the day. So you don't end up at like 9 o'clock at night going, uh-oh, right?
And then, I'm going for a 3-hour walk now.
Okay. I'll be home in a while. and then, really goal is 12,000. And then as you do that, then you add in that resistance training and you start to add in some things like a rucking vest. You know, you can add in some intensity on those walks.
All right. Who doesn't want more healthy years? I'm thinking nobody, certainly nobody listening to this episode. Not just a longer life, but the ability to do the things you love in your 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. Now, Inside Tracker is a company that can help you optimize your health span so that you live healthier for longer. The way they do this is by providing personalized plans based on your body's biometric data. Inside Tracker helps you to test your blood, your DNA, and can sync with your fitness tracker, and then provides you with clear science-backed recommendations like nutrition, exercise, supplement, and lifestyle based on those results. Inside Tracker also recently added hormone testing to their plan, which already includes important markers like ApoB, the heart health indicator, vitamin D3, magnesium, cortisol, and many more. As a matter of fact, 47 biomarkers. Now, you can also get your DNA tested and even get your inner age, which is a biological age calculation, along with recommendations on how to lower that inner age. Now, Inside Tracker is running a special deal for you, the listeners of this podcast. All you have to do is go to insidetracker.com and use discount code NIDDAM, NIDDAM, all caps, to save 20%. And now let's get back to the episode.
I also think that that speaks to a little bit the nervous system's involvement in our fitness, which becomes more and more important as we age. It's the innervation of those muscles and the communication back and forth to the brain, which also plays into the fall factor. And mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit like we talk about diet variation being so important, eating a lot, eating less, eating, higher this, lower that, just to keep the body kind of change, like the body, so that we don't adapt. Exercise is the exact same thing. And frankly, as a species, we survived because we adapted. And so you're really fighting that adaptation to a degree, which means, the uncomfortable truth about that means that your workouts will never actually get easier.
Right.
Because the day they get easy is the day you got to change them.
Right. That's it. I remember when I first started teaching people how to do high intensity interval training, and it's such a catch-all phrase. I mean, it could be anything now. And then I was like, okay, now we have sprint interval training, which is what I always thought high intensity interval training was. It's like, okay, so there's interval training that you can do in a variety of different ways. But I remember the first time someone called me and they go, okay, I've been doing it. And yeah, I'm not doing 30 seconds. I had people doing 30 to 60 seconds, double recovery 30s. She goes, now I'm doing 4 minutes straight. I go, then you're not going hard enough.
Yeah.
If you could do that,
you want to
go as hard as possible and have to stop as quickly as possible. That's always my goal there. Mm-hmm. Although there's something to be said for doing variations within interval training, because you're going to hit your different energy systems. You can go really hard, really quick. We had to do this in grad school. We all hated it, called a Wingate test, where you're really blowing out your creatine phosphate system. It's like a boof, it's 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And then you can work a little harder for a minute, and then you can do 4 minute ones. And it's used to be called the unfortunate name of fartlek training.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
I was like, where did that come? That's a terrible name.
Yeah. But that handle.
It's varying your intervals and making them hard and really recovering and really playing around with lactate. And I think it's going to be very fun when we actually have a lactate monitor.
Yes. Well, and because lactate has all these other benefits, right?
Yes,
doesn't
for your
it
brain,
have benefits for the brain? Exactly. So, all right, let's go back to, there's so many different things to talk about. So, you know what, guys, just take notes. We're going to jump around a bit. Going back to, we talked a little bit about the vegan and vegetarian dilemma, or whatever we want to call it. Let's go over to the other end of the spectrum here, the carnivores, because one of the things we said at the beginning of the podcast is trying to understand who do we listen to. And that's one of the biggest, it's one of the hardest things I think for all of our audiences to kind of get their heads around, right? How do I know who, and I get this from people all the time. Who's right? Like, everybody sounds like they're so right all the time. And to me, my hallmark, if somebody puts their, puts a stake in the ground on one spot and never moves, it's generally not a good sign, right? But let's talk a little bit about the carnivore diet, because I do think that if we want to look at ancestral humans, there would have been periods where people would have been carnivores and periods where people would have been by necessity, not like have only access to tubers and whatever they could dig out of the ground. And then those golden times when they had access to all of it, right?
Right.
But now we've got people who've kind of latched onto this carnivore thing saying, look, I feel better, I look better, it's easy, I'm just going to do this forever.
And here's the thing, if we think of diets as tools, we can look at, is this something that's a good short-term therapeutic thing to cause a result? Or is it something that would be great to do forever? Or if you did it forever, would it create some issues?
Mm-hmm.
Now, could you live like that forever? You could, because you're getting in protein and fat. And if you have protein, fat, and water, you can survive. But is that the best thing for the long term? Well, what about your gut microbiome and the fiber? So if you look back, like one of the first things that happened to me is I started to really dig into nutrition, and it happened. I was in doctoral school. I was in the exercise phys department. It was supposed to be exercise phys, nutrition, and aging. And I got fortunate. I was in a small room, probably 10 people, lecture with Lauren Cordain. wrote the paleo diet. Yeah. This was
That's one of the first books I ever read in this space.
This was pre-paleo diet, pre all that stuff. And I was like, light bulb moment. And, you know, the most interesting thing was here he was an exercise physiology professor whose sister-in-law got an autoimmune disease and he wanted to try to figure out how the heck to help her. And that's where this all came from. And as you start to really unpack it, you go, this is really, really interesting stuff, you know, and what is it that we can take from this? And one of the things that I think is interesting as you look at all of this is, you know, we would have lived by the circadian rhythm. Okay. So this is a very important thing. We would have lived by the circadian rhythm. Wouldn't really have snacked.
No.
You know?
Unless we had to.
Wouldn't have sat down and said, I'm going to have a meal of vegetables and protein. Like, you know, you would have probably eaten whatever you could have eaten. And they did a lot, like apparently, you know, the dried meat so that you would have that protein access. You think about when we had fruit availability, 1,000 years ago, and it was during the summer. In the summer, the days were longer. So you would have slept less, which would have made you more insulin resistant, which would have made you better at storing all of that fruit as fat to survive the longer winters when the nights were like, you know, days are shorter, nights are longer, you're more insulin sensitive, you can use more fat. So, I mean, just consider just even that piece of it, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
Then you look at, yes, we could totally survive off of animal protein and fat, not rabbit. In fact, I still remember Lauren Cardain talking about rabbit starvation.
Yeah.
Where if all you had was rabbits, they were so lean, you couldn't get enough essential fat to survive. So I think carnivore diet for someone who's got a lot of food sensitivities and their gut's really trashed, probably from all the ultra processed vegan food, you know, like, you know, but look at it. We've got the glyphosates alone and the GMO, like the challenge with GMOs is now you've genetically modified a crop to be able to withstand the spraying of some of these pesticides that you can't get them out. I don't care what you do. Like the pests, like you're not getting glyphosate out of the gluten. So you got it. So what is it doing? It's trashing your gut. I mean, what the heck do we have this leaky gut for, you know? Yeah. And I mean, that was the whole virgin diet was really pulling out foods that can create or exacerbate leaky gut, and people like had radical transformations because just inflammation went down, cravings went down, et cetera. So I think for a healing diet, it can be super therapeutic. It's like a keto, more of a keto style high protein. And it's almost like a protein, you know, sparing modified fast, right? In a lot of ways. So I think it can be super, super useful if you're eating clean and you're eating, what is it called? Hoof to snout, which I can't
with
do.
Organs.
Yuck. Hey, amazing. Short term. I'm really concerned about what I hear with Paul Saladino, who's now eating all this fruit with all of this stuff. I'm kind of like, okay, now we're eating like a load of fruit. And I don't think a load of fruit's ever the way to go. I don't think fruit is free food. I think most of us should have maybe 2 servings of fruit a day, not dried, not juiced, not syruped. That's, you know, to me, candy and sodas and syrups. And if you're athletic, active, maybe 3 servings of fruit, but you know, it's going to drive up more than that, drives up your triglycerides. So I think once you've gotten to the point where you've healed whatever it is, restored your blood sugar balance, healed your gut, now it's time to start looking at what can we introduce back in so, you know, to get your gut microbiome working well. Because one of the things that Lauren Cardain showed way back when was, we weren't eating cereal grains at all. No grains.
Not efficient. They took far too long.
But we were eating vegetables and fruit.
And tubers.
You know, and tubers. So we were eating that stuff, but we weren't eating the grains. And so it makes a lot of sense. I'm kind of I call myself a paleo plus. Basically my diet is animal protein. I can rotate in some Greek style yogurt now and, you know, veggies and a little bit of fruit. And I will occasionally eat some legumes. That's kind
I mean, there's value to them to a point to rebuilding the gut, right? That soluble fiber, the resistant starch, like there's
all the prebiotic fiber. I'll tell you what makes me really concerned is this veggies as the devil situation that's out there. Yeah. This stuff about lectins and phytates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first of all, like if you look at, and I think one of the greatest books ever written was Nourishing Traditions.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? I mean, just an amazing book. But they talk about like fermenting things and, you know, soaking foods and what we would do to make these, foods digestible, to make the nutrients more available. So it's really about preparing things correctly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're back to shortcuts, right? Like we're in a world where, I mean, I don't know about, you know, it's funny, like I'm at an age now where my grandmother is not going to be the same as a lot of people's grandmothers who are listening, but my grandmother would soak those chickpeas. Like she wasn't opening a can. She was soaking those chickpeas overnight. She was changing the water. She was like virtually sprouting them. It changes the food, but we've lost that. And we want things right now, right? We want them immediately. And then we want to grind it up into a flour and call it.
I know. And then you're like, wait a minute, that is, you've just junk food my chickpeas.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's a huge difference. Every time we travel, we're always amazed because we especially love like Greece, Turkey. We love all of that type of food. And we're in, you know, Italy, et cetera. We always amazed whenever we get out of the US and Canada, how much better we feel.
Yeah.
And then, you know, how much like we were in Korea and Bali this summer, and Korean food's unbelievably amazing. And every time you sit down, it's always really amazing beef. Like what they do with their beef is incredible. Grass fed, grass finished, and then all these fermented foods.
Yeah. 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 And you can eat pretty much anything once it's been
loads
fermented.
Of veggies.
Yeah.
Loads of veggies, but all this fermented stuff so that you're, and if you look at all of the traditional cultures, they all have them.
Yeah. Every one of them. Absolutely. That and the broths, right? The bone broths.
Yep.
Like that's, and in most of the cultures, I don't know that there's one that, I mean, I haven't looked at all of them, but I think, I don't know that I can think of a culture that doesn't have a broth of some kind that they use.
Yeah, I'm just going through it now. I can't. Think of it. And then you get to us and our traditional foods. What are they?
Well, I'm Mediterranean, so I come from that world. And
I mean, you look at it, pickles and sauerkraut, I guess, if you wanted fermented food on a hot dog with a white bun.
But you're not getting the fermented kind. You're getting the sauerkraut off the shelf and the pickle off the shelf, right? That's been made sour by vinegar. So it's just a whole other kettle of fish. So, okay. So a couple more topics. I mean, you know, we could record 20 podcasts here, but another couple of topics I wanted to touch on with you also was going back to the fasting thing and the amino acids, like this whole idea that people have latched onto, and I think it's out of convenience and habit, where they insist on and this, I don't know if this was covered in that study, so it'll be interesting to look at it when we have the time. But people's idea of intermittent fasting is always to skip breakfast. And in my mind, if you're going to intermittent fast, the meal you want to skip is dinner.
You are my sister.
I did. I'd love you, you know, with your wisdom to explain, to tell people like, why is that so freaking important? Because, and especially for women and probably also for men, but, you know, looking at women's health, like eating that protein first thing in the morning is so critically important. And yet people want to skip breakfast. Like it's just so much easier.
They feel like it's easier, but I think, you know, and again, I need to unpack all of this to look at. But, you know, there are also those studies where they show that people that do that tend to eat more.
Yeah. By the end of the day.
When they skip breakfast.
Yeah.
Here's what I would just look at. And I actually love, like, I was just listening to Blaine Norton rant about something, but he said, you know, there's pathways, there's mechanisms and outcomes. So make sure you don't confuse the two. And I think that's a very important statement. Mm-hmm. You know, and so... And by the way, I also think we need to be an N of one. So look at what works well for you. There are those people who are just not hungry in the morning. I remember I had a very famous actress. She was like, every nutritionist tells me I have to eat breakfast. I just do not like breakfast. I am not hungry in the morning. You know, and she did fine having a meal around 11 or 12 and then another one around 6. That was just what worked best for her. Always had been that way. Do we disrupt that? No, leave it.
Although you could use essential amino. One thing I've done with people sometimes who aren't hungry is I'll get them to have essential amino acids.
Yeah. And especially if you're going like it, when the occasional time when I have to work out first thing in the morning. So I think we should be eating about 2 hours after we wake up. I think that's really the sweet spot. I love Dr. Sachin Panda's work. I think that is the person to listen to in this arena. Mm-hmm. Now, that 8-hour fasting window, he has said it was because the grad student who was doing this, his wife wanted him home at a certain time. And I think back to what the research studies we did in grad school, and we were limited by like, what time could the students come in? And what, you know, so he was feeding the mice, but he couldn't get there before this time. He had to leave at this time. So there was an 8-hour window.
Yeah. Imposed by his wife, guys, not science.
Not science. Could have been 9 hours, could have been 6 hours. No, it was 8 because of that. So we don't know. We don't know if 9 would be better. We don't know if 10 would be better. And we don't know what would be best for you based on your diet and lifestyle and goals and everything else. So, but here's what we do know is that you are in a constant, you're always breaking down and building up. You do this with your bones. You do this, you know, you do autophagy. We're always doing autophagy. We're doing mitophagy. We're breaking down muscle. We're building up muscle, muscle protein turnover. So you want to make sure if you're trying to put on muscle that you are building up more than you're breaking down. Mm-hmm. So your muscle protein synthesis more than your muscle protein breakdown. You're going to sleep at night. Now, this is way more, this is simplifying it. This is way more nuanced and confusing because depending on the protein you're eating and how long these can go longer. But, you know, let's assume that a lot of what's happening as you're sleeping, you're in your overnight fast and you're getting catabolic. And you wake up in the morning, you see the sunlight, love Dr. Andrew Huberman's work on this, you know, see the sunlight, ground, you know, wake your body up, melatonin's down because you've gotten exposed to sunlight, cortisol's up, that's helping you wake up. That's a good thing. Cortisol's not to be feared.
Yes.
Elevated cortisol for like all this now. Don't do that exercise because cortisol will go up. I'm like, you know what? Don't do exercise because your blood pressure is going to go up, your blood sugar is going to go up, your cortisol is going to go up. What? Yeah. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
So I actually got my blood sugar up to 200 doing a really, really hard lifting thing. I was like so proud of myself. It's like, boom. So
everybody's horrified. You know. You're like,
oh my gosh. I mean,
how long did it take to come down?
Yeah.
No time. Like, I mean, right. Here's,
you know, hormones have things they're supposed to do. If you have low insulin all the time, you're never going to be able to build muscle and you're going to have jacked blood sugar.
Yeah.
So insulin comes up, it comes down.
Yeah.
No. Blood sugar comes up, it comes down. Cortisol needs to come up in the morning to get your ass out of bed and get you moving. You need cortisol. So comes up, wakes up everything, pancreas, let's go. We can start now pumping out insulin. So like 2 hours after you wake up is a great time to have breakfast. I mean, if we could design the perfect day, which is hard to do with work schedules and life and kids and all that, husbands and all those things,
all those things
around us,
yes.
Right? But it would be perfect if you woke up in the morning. And this is occasionally I'll go, okay, I got to actually do my perfect thing. Do not think I'm the influencer as the perfect morning routine every day. Ideally, I hit it once or twice a week and I'm like, yay on me. Mm-hmm. But you know, I get up in the morning, pee, weigh in on my bioimpedance scale so it reads to my app so I keep tracking the trends. I come back into bed, I take my thyroid, I put my eye mask on, I do a Dr. Joe Dispenza meditation with my dogs. And my husband, my dogs go straight in. They hear Dr. Joe say, eyes closed. And they go, whoop, they're out. It's hilarious. I told him, I go, Dr. Joe, my dogs, like the minute they hear the music and they hear you go, eyes closed, they go, zoom, and they're down.
It's hilarious.
Then we do that. Then I have some coffee. Then I go do my, we open up all the windows. We see the light. I go do my little quick hot sauna. Then I do my cold plunge. Then I do red lights. Then I eat. It's about 2 hours out now.
This is a leisurely day.
Yes. This would be like the perfect day. And maybe I get it again. Like, and of course I travel all the time, not taking my cold plunge, hot sauna and everything else with me. And then I go to the gym like an hour later. So I've given myself time, but I was in muscle protein breakdown. Now I want to flip that switch. And I want to get that protein bolus in with some leucine to trigger that. And especially I want those amino acids on board when I'm going to the gym. Now I'm traveling all like I, so I travel, I am a very heavy traveler. In fact, I tore a tendon legging so much suitcase. I have to go get prolotherapy. I was like, damn it. You know, so because we travel with a coffee maker, we travel with a food scale, a regular scale, we travel with measuring cups, we travel with all of our creatine and taurine, like we travel with so much stuff and bars and powders and it's ridiculous and workout clothes and a TRX.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. People so in our space are not carry-on bag people.
We are not like just aren't. No. And then we didn't even talk about skincare, which is a whole nother
thing. Oh my God, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
A whole different thing. That would be a whole nother like thing. But so now I'm waking up in the morning and I'm at a hotel and the only time I can work out is like 6:30 in the morning. So we're going to do a 15-minute quickie with Dr. Joe, slam some coffee, and I will take a big water bottle with electrolytes, creatine. Now I take my creatine. I just keep my tissue stores saturated. So I don't worry about like getting in when I work out because I got my tissue stores saturated. But when I'm traveling, I'll throw my creatine with taurine and magnesium, electrolytes. So more magnesium. And then I will throw essential amino acids in there.
Yeah.
And that's what I go to the gym with so that I've got those on board. Mm-hmm. So that is how I do my little hack of that. And at home, I will take electrolytes and essential amino acids with me because it's like, why not?
Yeah,
it's not going to hurt me. And so, and I keep thinking, you know, what I'd really love to do is at night, you know, with my evening meal, after my evening meal, do another hit of essential amino acids. And damn if I don't forget. So anyway,
night supplements are the worst.
I know. So I have all the ones I have to take by my bed. And I finally just went, you know, I'm going to take the majority of these during the day because I'm really bad at my night. But my night ones are magnesium. And then I have a product called Sleep Candy that I take. And I take nitric oxide twice a day. But, you know, ideally, stop eating minimally 2 hours before bed, but really 2 to 4 hours. Why? Because now melatonin is coming up, shutting cortisol down, putting pancreas to sleep, which is why you eat those carbs. And no one, by the way, no one at midnight's eating salmon.
They shouldn't be.
I have looked at a lot of diet recalls, and when someone eats late at night, it's never like, you know what?
Oh, I'm just going to nasty some carb to keep their brain away.
It's never like some Brussels sprouts. It's never. It's something heinous that shouldn't even be in your house because you should not bring the enemy to the house.
Yeah.
Just don't do it. If you need a little sweet after a meal, ideally we retrain your taste buds. But in the interim, and by the way, sour takes your sweet tooth away. Mm-hmm. And I really think that if you're doing, and this is where essential amino acids can help too. I think a lot of our cravings are we're not getting our essential amino acids in.
Yeah.
That swealthy snack from RX Sugar, that little dark chocolate bar. Oh my goodness. They're amazing. So swealthy snack.
Shout out. Love the name. Shout out to Swealthy Snack. They did not pay for this, and that's okay.
Shout out to Swealthy.
They're that good.
Funded by Swealthy Snacks, although they did send me a big love box. Send more.
JJ wants more Swealthy.
I want more Swealthy. I know. I know you probably do too. I get like so much stuff.
Oh, I know.
And most of the stuff, I'm like, I don't want this. Like, I don't know. And then they're like, did you try to go? I didn't ask for it. I don't want it. Ick. Yeah. But the Swealthy Snacks, I'm like, send more of this.
Okay. All right. Well, so if you're going to have something before bed, Swealthy Snack, but ideally
don't eat before bed. No.
Don't eat that's before like, bed. I mean, it's not, give your body the chance to like, it has a whole other to-do list. Like the way I put it to people, your body has a massive to-do list overnight. And if you're digesting food, that to-do list goes out the window.
You just screwed that up. Now growth hormone can't come up. So no, they're hard and fast rules. Wait at least an hour before eating when you wake up in the morning. Two is preferred.
Okay.
At least 2 hours before bed, stop eating. 3 to 4 preferred. So let's think about it. You waited 2 hours. You woke up at 6 a.m. You didn't eat till 8. And then you're going to bed. You're getting in bed at 9. So you're asleep by 10. So you stopped eating by 7. Look at this already. You already right there have an easy 11-hour fast. And it's easy enough to push the morning to 9. And come down a little bit on dinner. I really think, you know, my hard and fast rules is you should not be eating more than 12 hours a day. Give me a break.
Yeah.
But
you don't
ideally,
need to.
You don't need to. I really like a 9-hour window or 10 at most. And I find for most people that is super attainable and still having a normal life.
Yeah, no, I agree. It allows you to go out for dinner on occasion. Mm-hmm. It allows you to live your life. And
yeah, and not be that weird, rigid person that's no fun at all. Which I look at Brian Johnson. So I'm
so happy you brought him up because okay, I didn't know what you're going to say.
I couldn't help myself. And so I'm like, first of all, he looks like a weirdo. And I'm just saying this because I know he'll never listen to this.
Yeah.
Because he's too busy spending all his time trying
taking
to extend
500
his life.
Pills a day. Yes.
I'm like, how fun is this? Is he married? Because I can't imagine he couldn't be married. No, I mean, I'm like, this sounds like the most miserable existence. And if you really look at, like, if I was going to look at what are the best longevity hacks out there, have friends.
Mm-hmm. Laugh.
Have friends who really like you too, who lift you up, who have a growth mindset, who are doing super cool stuff out there. You do super cool stuff with them. When you look at the blue zones, I know everyone wants to think it's the diet. I think probably the diet in the blue zones that makes the most sense is that they're eating whole foods and closer to nature and they're doing traditional stuff. It's not that they're vegan. I'm sorry. Sardinians are not vegans.
Thank you.
Have you been to Sardinia? Yeah. They're not vegans.
No.
So that ain't it. Mm-hmm. It's that they're actually eating real food. But mm-hmm. the bigger thing is they're actually relevant as they age. I just interviewed Chip Conley, who started Modern Elder Academy and wrote this awesome book. It's right here, Learning to Love Midlife. He's fabulous. Look at this guy.
Oh.
You should have him.
I want to.
Yeah. I'll hook you up. Anyway, you know, when you look at it, it's like not being revered as you age, it's being relevant. It's yes. having a purpose. It's having a calling and it's having super cool friends, younger than you, older than you. And it's you know, having that bigger, like I'm more excited about my career at this stage than I've ever been. And I've always been fired up about it, but I'm more fired up about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at someone like that and I go, okay, you're doing all the things, but you're not living life.
No, it's the life that Fun forgot. Literally.
Yeah. Shit, I knew I forgot something today.
I forgot Fun, man. No, that's such a great point. And, you know, the point I've made to on occasion is, you know, none of the centenarians we're seeing right now are people who set out to be centenarians, right? They're also, many of them are
right.
probably more frail than we'd want to be. So as much as we want to take maybe a page or two out of their book, consider that there are other pages that we could do it better. And,
right.
and I do think that, we all, you know, being even close to the baby boomer generation, we know that we are people who want it all. We want to live.
I am a boomer.
I'm the last year. I'm bringing in the rear, sister. I'm like December of the last year.
I will tell you though, like I look at it, my mom, my adopted mom just passed last year at 93. Up until a couple months before she passed, at which point I was like, I'm taking your car away.
Yeah.
You cannot drive on the sidewalk, mom. But prior to that, last couple months, my mom lived in a 2-story house. She did all of her own housework, all of her own shopping. She had a bigger social life than I'll ever expect to have. She has more friends.
Yeah.
Like, and friends of all ages. She golfed 3 times a week. And she had a purpose because I have an adopted schizophrenic brother. So she took care of him. So she had a reason for being. And like, you know, then she went out like a light bulb.
Yeah.
And so like the takeaways there are community,
mm-hmm.
you know, have people who, and activity. She was always active, always, always, always. She ate real food, although she raised me on Pop-Tarts, full disclosure, Captain Crunch and Cocoa Puffs.
Okay.
My nickname growing up was Poppy.
Because of the Cocoa Puffs?
It was Poppy for the Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
And I was Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Oh my God.
Anyway, so she did raise me, but I mean, we had like real food every single, like
she probably cooked dinner every night, right?
She cooked dinner every single night.
For sure.
We had a vegetable, a salad, a protein, a starch every night.
Listen, I grew up that way. My mother-in-law is like your mom. She's 92 years old. She lives independently. She lives in a two-story house. The stairs to her basement, they gave me anxiety. But you know what? It's tending the garden, the community. It's exactly what you're talking about. These are the long-lived people, and the relevance and the feeling needed and the being needed and keeping yourself engaged. And this is where, you know, it's interesting. I'm at an age now, I look around me and I have a lot of friends who are like, oh, I'm retiring. I can't wait to retire. And the first question I ask, they're looking at me going, aren't you going to retire? I'm like, why? I feel like I'm just getting started. Like, forget that. Yeah. And then I look at them and I say, so what's your plan? Like, what are you going to do? And I don't generally get a lot of really good answers. And I kind of go, all right, I'm going to go record a podcast now. Yeah, I got to go. Yeah. Okay.
That sounds like a lot of fun. You have fun with that.
You go crazy. All right. So JJ, are we up on time? We're just about up on time. So I actually feel like you've given us your roadmap for a perfect day, all the things. Is there anything left on the table you want to share in this interview? Or are we just going to say, see ya in Austin and London and all the places we're going to see each other this year?
You know, I think the most important thing with all of this stuff is it's easy to listen to all this stuff and then look at everybody else's life and go that, you know, they're Miss Perfect, blah, blah, blah. And everyone's just doing the best they can. And I think the most important thing, whenever you listen to these things, I'm always working on one thing. Yeah. I love that book by Gary Keller, One Thing.
One Thing, yeah.
One Thing. When I try to work on more than one thing, I do no things. Mm-hmm. So I just focus on one thing. Right now, I am focusing on my step count. That's what I'm focusing on.
The thing.
Right? For a while there, I was focusing on like, how heavy can I lift? Then I got into my HRV. Right now, it's my step count. I'm just focusing on my step count because I want to get it up to making sure that I hit 12,000 every single day. So that's what I'm focusing on. Just one thing. And that's the biggest thing I would say, whatever it is, whether it's okay, now I'm going to make sure I'm getting in the right amount of protein each day and eating it first, do that. You know, if it's non-starchy vegetables, whatever, one thing. Nail the one thing. Make the one thing so much a part of your life, you don't have to think about the one thing anymore, and then go to the next thing.
Love it. Great advice. Okay. I think this is, I don't know that anybody really needs this information, but JJ, why don't you tell people, just in case they've been living under a rock all this time, where they can find you and how to access all your incredible books and resources and things.
JJVirgin.com. I also did a very fun thing, a 7-day protein challenge where literally, like the results we get from people by just focusing on the one thing, they have a protein calculator to figure out how much protein they need. And then they a free app and you just do this protein challenge with this meal plan, et cetera. It's like, I'm not hungry. I don't have cravings. I have more energy. So that's at jjvirgin.com/protein-first. And that's it. Yeah. On my website, my Well Beyond 40 podcast and YouTube. I'm really focused on YouTube right now. Instagram, all that stuff's there. Lots of blogs, lots of recipes. I have an amazing chef that writes my recipes because I don't measure anything when I'm cooking. I just throw.
Yeah. Well, which you get to do once you've been cooking long enough.
Yeah. I just toss stuff in. So this will help.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a fantastic conversation. It was definitely worth waiting for me. And I'm looking forward to our paths crossing again real soon.
I am too. We get to hang out. I'm so excited. Yay.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up today's episode, I'd love to invite you to sign up for my newsletter. Each week, I share my biggest key takeaways from that week's podcast episode, giving you insight into how to take action on what you learned in the interview. Plus, I share the biohacks I'm loving that week and why, as well as facts and tips about peptides for longevity. To join the newsletter, head over to natalienidham.com/newsletter to get access now or find the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for your continued support and for tuning in to today's episode. I wish you all the best this week in biohacking your superhuman performance.
Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnidham.com.
And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.